Flash goes, "How can you be the government and criminals?" And all of them start laughing.
Someone was in 2024 and wrote that line, definitely.
Hi, I'm Shamar Griffith, codename Comic Shams.
And I'm Andrew Tejada, codename Arate. This season, we're racing through every part of the Tomorrowverse on
yet another DC animated podcast, part of the Forgotten Entertainment family.
Welcome to yet another episode of yet another DC animated podcast. My name is Shamar Griffith, codename Comic Shams.
And I am Andrew Tejada, codename Arate.
Andrew and I have known each other since 1996.
That was the year NASA scientists debated the scale of the universe on how big the universe was. It was also the year Carmen Sandiego's game show started and she started slipping through time and interfering. Coincidence?
It's the Scarlet Thief. Oh my gosh. Okay, you know what? This has been, I'm gonna blame Flash for this one. He's been going back in time to set up things, to set up those two things in general, probably helped us with this film today. That's because we are talking today about the beginning of the end of this podcast coverage of the Tomorrowverse. Hope I didn't scare nobody out there.
Surprise finale, guys.
Yes, we are covering the beginning of the end of the Tomorrowverse as we are setting up these last set of films that were probably slated. So yeah, this is probably one of the last couple of films slated before the Safran Gun take over the direction that they're going to go with the new animated world of the DCU. So today we are covering probably the movie with the longest title I've ever seen in my life. Justice League Crisis on Infinite Earths Part 1. This is a PG-13 rated film. I'm assuming that is for one scene in particular that I'm probably going to talk about. with just some light details. Not trying to get canceled because we passed our rating. At a runtime of 93 minutes, this 2024 animated film was directed by Jeff Wamster, who we know, as we've talked about, has been directing the last set of films within this Tomorrowverse. Jim Craig has been working alongside him to write and write the screenplay for these films. And we have the animation services provided once again by Maven Image Platform. This is based in Korea. They've done work on Harley Quinn, Invincible, the Long Halloween movies. From the Batman ones, some of the later half of the DCAMU that we've covered in our first season of the podcast, and my favorite here of all time, Invader Zim.
What a
the rebooted
champion.
The rebooted stuff though. not.
I was like, whoa, that's some clean animation.
So alongside this animation studio, we got Edge Animation Company. They've done some work well as well, just in the same stuff that we talked about that Maven has done. They also did work on Kipo and the Age of the Wonder Beast. It's a really great show. If you haven't checked it out on Netflix, hashtag not sponsored, I would definitely recommend it. Basically, the entire cast is pretty much almost all black, plus they have some fire music. Sterling K. Brown is one of the actors on that show.
Hey.
And even though he's not here in our movie today, we are going to run through the cast list. We're going to go through pretty quickly, like one might even say flash speed, because everybody's here. So we got the established Justice League characters, which get established more in this film, a little spoiler, but we did see them earlier on in other films, as we have Matt Bomer, who is returning as Barry Allen the Flash from his appearance in Justice Society World War II. Darren Criss was the one that started this whole universe with Man of Tomorrow. He is returning as Superman, as well as Earth 2 Superman. Meg Donnelly was some time ago announced as one of the people on the short list for Supergirl within the James Gunn Safran universe. She's returning today as Supergirl. Stata Katic, who was on the show Castle, she was also in the movie Superman Unbound as Lois Lane. She is returning to this universe once again as Wonder Woman. We got Jimmy Simpson from the It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, the Boyle brothers. He's returning from his introduction in a little bit of Long Halloween, but more fully fleshed out in Beware My Power as Green Arrow. And we got Aldis Hodge, who is returning as John Stewart Green Lantern. He's also voicing his Earth 3 counterpart, Power Ring. We got Ike Amadi, who continues to voice Ja'an Jones, as well as Ivo in our Dr. Ivo in our film today. And someone that we talked about in our Young Justice series, who was never shown, but today we see him. Will Everett, the amazing man, is here, y'all.
Finally. We were waiting for him to get lines in, right? In Young Justice, and he has some here.
And wrapping up the Justice League, we got Keisha Sharpe, who's returning once again as Vixen. Next up, I'm going to go into some highlighted characters here, as we have returning from the depths of our first season on the DC AMU. We got Aquaman, who is the voice of Anakin Skywalker, as Matt Lantern returns not only as Aquaman, but Blue Beetle Ted Kord and Ultraman.
Okay, that's a good voice, because I did not recognize him as Ultraman. And I kept calling him Superior Man in my notes. I don't know why. I didn't look that up at all.
It was like that random U on his chest makes no sense unless it's for like the U in Superior. Like Superman already had the S.
I assumed the Superman couldn't spell.
Oh, man. Speaking of Aquaman, though, this voice actor is none other than the later Spartacus, the weather wizard in the Flash TV series, and the voice of Captain Boomerang in Suicide Squad Hell to Pay, as Liam McIntyre is providing the voice of Johnny Quick. So, yes, that's I realized Matt Lanter was the Aquaman in the DC AMU, but this version of Aquaman, if I'm remembering correctly, this version of Aquaman in this universe is the same voice as the Liam McIntyre, who's also voicing Johnny Quick. It is, I feel like at this point, we need to get more people. No offense to Liam McIntyre, but we need more people.
That's it. That's it. If you need Constantine voice, you call one person. Same thing with Liam.
Next up, we got Lou Diamond Phillips. Honestly, this is just a name that I feel that everybody just knows if you grew up in the 90s. He is the Spectre and Owlman on Earth 3. We were talking about, you know, like this guy in the past on Young Justice. He held it down as Superboy and Superman. But today, Nolan North is Amazo and the man in need who keeps sending Barry through some situations, which I'm going to talk about later on.
Suspicious. Right.
Wrapping it up, we got Zach Callison. He's the voice of Dick Grayson, a.k.a. Robin, which honestly I feel is great casting because this is the voice actor for Steven Universe.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I did not notice. Amazing.
Yeah, so I'm actually, my petition is Zach Callison needs to be Dick Grayson in any future animated production that we have.
I don't care where you put him. Put him out live action. I don't care.
Actually, he does have to look for live action. Yeah, you're right. We got Erica Ishii. They return as the DC from the DC animated world. We talked about their performance as the child and Mary Bromfield in the magic arc of the Young Justice Phantom series. Now Erica is voicing Dr. Light and Huntress, which I hope we get to see more of, because these two characters in general have always been like some cool behind the scenes characters in the DC universe. I wish they always got some more stories told about them. And finally, we have, wrapping up, we have the voice of Mr. Terrific. This is Otto Asando. He is currently seeing a lot of political dramas, such as The Diplomat. He's also done some voice acting, including on the Wolverine podcast. And wrapping it all up, we have Ashley Lathrop, who is returning as Iris West. And you might have seen her already in the work on The Handmaid's Tale. And those are that's a long cast list, y'all. I told you everybody's in it. All right. So with that, let us boom tube over to the beginning of the Justice League Crisis on Infinite Earths, Part 1.
So we have the Flash. He's running, he's gunning right past all these exploding Earths, and he stops at the scene of the original accident that gave him his powers. So we think. We'll talk about it later, but that's what it seems to happen at the beginning of this movie. And right after, we cut to Barry, early career Flash, it seems, and he's at a diner ordering the most disgusting combination of meal you've ever seen,
because I just doubt Central City seasons their food. And he meets Iris, who's working as a waitress on her shift. And he tells her, yo, ignore your shift. Sit down, have lunch with me. I have not worked in food service, but I imagine this would not go well for the waitress waiter in the situation. So I'm not recommending you do this, but
no tip is worth that.
And as a sign from the universe that you shouldn't do this, in the middle of their date, we see someone outside, a mysterious stranger looks at Flash, and all of a sudden, Flash cuts over to a battle with the Mazo.
Yeah, so it's funny because it's a very similar opening scene to Justice Society World War II, because as Flash is battling a Mazo, he does get saved by Superman. Unsure where this is taking place, but the scene is very similar, except for the fact in that movie, Flash and Superman are battling Brainiac. So I need to know how many like robotic-like creatures are attacking the Earth that only Flash and Superman seem to be the only ones handling the situation.
I mean, is this even the same Flash?
Oh, good question. Good question. All right. So as I ponder that now, Flash continues to run through this battle. Fortunately for him, he does get saved by an individual, this old man, who comes up and says, don't do this. He's talking to Amazo, the android here. And as Amazo is distracted, this gives Superman enough time to fly in to pull Flash out of the fire. However, it seems that Flash is still disoriented. It seems like he was in the process of thinking about that first time that he met Iris. And then he realizes that, wait, I'm the Flash. I'm here to save the day. And he's starting to also pick up on the fact that, like, he knows that this robot is named Amazo, which Superman didn't know. And as he shares this information, we see that Superman, unfortunately, gets his abilities drained by Amazo, causing Amazo now to become the world's deadliest robot because he has super speed, super strength. And the more they keep attacking Amazo, the more their powers get absorbed. And they keep joking with each other, saying that, like, oh man, you look so weak that you doesn't even look like you could blow out a candle on your birthday. And it's a fun little, I don't know if this is like the first meeting of these two, or maybe it's previous meetings of these two, but we do see though that they get saved by the greatest vigilante equipped with a bow and arrow, wearing green, as Robin Hood enters the scene.
Ah, at least that's what we hope. But unfortunately, in this crossover movie, all we get is Green Arrow. Green Arrow is great, everyone. He started the CW-verse. But he comes in, makes it clear that he is Green Arrow because he has a car. The only difference, apparently, between the two. And he's able to cause a distraction to get them to safety. But he recognizes he's not going to be able to take down Amazo himself. So he gets Superman into the car. Superman says, take me anywhere but Star Labs. This must be a universe with Wells, another Wells. And he says specifically, take him to his best billionaire friend's house. And I love Alfred when Green Arrow and Flash show up at the door. He's just like unfazed. He's like, yo, Bruce, you got somebody here for you, man. And Batman instantly exposes both of these men, lays out their secret identities right in front of the door, says, get in here, Superman. But before we can continue on with this, we cut away. There's no getting around it. We'll address this now. There's a lot of cutaways in this movie.
Oh, so many. It's like watching an episode of Family Guy on Flash Speed, honestly.
Exactly. We keep jumping around in time. There is a justification for it, but it's going to happen a lot. So if you haven't seen this movie, I'm sorry, because we're not doing it in time order. That's too complicated. We're going in the order the movie presented it. So now we're going back to Iris and Barry. They're right about to get married. But before that, they have to give way too much money to a random stranger.
Oh, yes, because during this conversation, they're planning out their wedding. Barry's like, you should put Iris's on the table because, haha, funny joke about her name being Iris. But he also mentions that they had Iris's at their table, which shows that he's been kind of what Iris calls time tripping. Yeah, she calls it time tripping. And she says that, you know, you could do a lot of good without putting your body on the line, which I feel like is definitely a shot at Bruce. Because as he offers this money, this is when my greatest fear comes to life, where this man says, the worlds are ending. And you would think, oh, that's already scary. But he reaches out and grabs Barry's face full force. Mm-mm. And it is so much that Barry runs away in fear to the moment where he gets introduced to Dick Grayson, which creates now one of my favorite scenes in any animated production, because as Barry opens the door, he sees Bruce there with this kid. He introduces him as Dick Grayson. He tells him that, you know, like, hey, do you want to go hang out with Wally? Because he's currently downstairs. My nephew is about the same age. He's playing some video games. And now it turns into Bruce asking Barry, with your connections to the Central City Orphanage, since you volunteered there, can you put Dick Grayson and Foster in the process here? Because he doesn't believe that the situation in Gotham's orphanages are actually ideal.
Not optimum is the word
to use. Not optimum, yes.
Which I think is vastly underselling it.
Oh my, yes. This turns into Barry questioning Bruce, hey, why don't you actually just foster this kid? You have more than enough space, you have more than enough rooms, and he seems to have taken a real shine to you. And Bruce is telling him, look, my situation, my mission is the most important thing. Me raising this child will be too dangerous. And as just as Bruce says this, we do another time jump to back when this like scene that was actually set up as a post-credit scene in The Long Halloween of now Superman being cared for by Bruce and Flash and Green Arrow, and they're asking some good questions, you know, like, mm-hmm. What is Amazo? Who was the old man that was there? This is when it's revealed that it's Dr. Anthony Ivo, an employee of Lex Luthor's, been missing for 3 weeks, that possibly has some kind of like cellular degenerative condition due to them seeing some tapping that he was doing on his cane. But also, he's a graduate of the Nairobi University, so it makes me believe that maybe in some universe Dr. Ivo may and Anansi from Static Shock probably cross paths. It also answers the question of like, how does Batman know their identities? Which he reveals that he has an embarrassing viral video of Green Arrow stubbing his toe. Not quite like, I guess, Lord of the Rings, but just way, way worse. And finally, Flash asks the most important question of all. Is it just Batman or is it the Batman?
Ooh, this is going to get confusing in the Gunverse because of the Batman movie in 2022. So now, who knows?
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is a really big question and we don't get an answer, y'all.
We'll never know. What we do know is in the morning, Superman is getting some strong tea from Alfred, and hey, Batman is contemplating killing everyone to keep his secret. But instead, what brings everything back is Superman mentions Flash had an idea to start a Justice League of some sort. And Batman and Green Arrow are not for it. They're like, we're loners. But Batman's like, it's a terrible idea, but we're gonna do it anyway. And we get a short recruitment montage where when they go to recruit Vixen specifically.
Thank you. Yes. Let's talk about it. This is it right here.
When they go to recruit Vixen, they pull up on her backstage of a fashion show. And Oliver, Bruce, and Clark are in fine wear and suited up. And Barry shows up. This is the album of the year, yo. This is the album cover. I don't know. This looks like the hardest drop. We have to put the image somewhere in the promotional, because that's the album drop right there. These are like, yo, it goes too hard. It goes way too hard. So they pick up Vixen. Then they get Martian Manhunter by kind of sneaking up on him, which is a little bit rude, I think.
Yeah, he was looking at some PG-13 photos. That's why I was like, was this why we got a PG-13 rating?
Yeah, I was like, let him do his job. And then lastly, they try to recruit Green Lantern, but Green Lantern is like, yo, I'm already on a team. I'm not paying membership dues for both. I'm out. And with this, they're like, well, we have enough numbers anyway. So just as they're about to get ready, enjoy the start of their league, we cut away to New York in the 90s. I mean, sorry, Earth 3.
Yeah, it's bad because once again, Barry gets that full-on face grab by that same dude that he gave money to earlier. Again, greatest fear, y'all. So as Barry's looking through as the Flash, he's looking at this Earth. He's noticing that everyone around him is just very scared of seeing him. He doesn't know why, but he does see that at a close-by bank, there seems to be like a bag of money being loaded up into a truck and a speedster. So he's thinking, oh, either someone's stealing the money or this is a speedster who needs help. So we get a fun little scene of him taking the money, putting it back in while the speedster takes the money out and puts it back on the ground. And then we get face to face with this version of Johnny Quick, who tells Barry, well, aren't you a regular Zippy Rodriguez? I think it's just a fun little thing because it's just like, I think that was like either a potential name or like an alternate name that was used in the comics or to show that this is a different Earth kind of thing. So they start talking and Barry realizes that the reason why that this speedster he's running up against, the speedster is telling him that he's moving really slow. And Barry's like, well, I feel really fast. And it's because this speedster apparently killed all the other Speed Force users so as to get their power. And in a quick 5 seconds, we get the entire plot of Jet Li's The One. Which, like, I really appreciate it.
But after a minute to killing all the speedsters, Johnny Quick says, hey, by the way, this is what I do. You're not going to know it for long because my friends are going to come and kill you. And in the second album cover of the movie, Superwoman, Power Ring, Owlman, and Ultraman pull up. And they're like, you know what we're here to do? To knock the bricks off Flash. And they pretty much instantly do that. And just as Flash is he's being asked, how do you want to die? He says, of old age. We cut away back to Justice League forming for the first day. They have a big press conference. Bruce Wayne, Batman, has brought the hall, the rundown Hall of Justice, and Flash is tasked with giving the speech, which is really unfair because of his time jumping condition. I would not be able to form a single word after that. But before he can really get going with the speech, someone decides they didn't like the content. So instead of throwing shoes like George Bush, they throw cars at Superman's way. And with everyone in danger, Flash has to go into Flash time to prevent his fellow heroes from being killed like sticks, like Nightwing in the Injustice universe. But he has some help.
Damn, you're never gonna let that go.
Never.
And that help comes from the most unlikely of sources as Amazo is yelling out to Flash to be careful of this action and that action that he's perpetrating. And it's because at the core of his being, Amazo reveals that he does want to help preserve human life. However, there is this new best friend that he has that is basically telling him that like these certain actions help to preserve human life, but through a different ways that he's not exactly seeing. And that new best friend happens to be Lex Luthor, who appears in a full on, like basically straight out of the Pacific Rim Lex suit. It also looks a little bit like the parasite suit that's used in My Adventures with Superman. It's a lot. And as Amazo is absorbing all the powers of all the individuals, it's really only Batman and Green Arrow who have to lead the attack on Amazo since they're the only two without powers, as Flash tries to figure out the best way to save everyone as he is individually speeding around, grabbing people, moving them out the way of cars, moving them from the battleground. And this is where we start having this conversation of what we need to do next, because Batman has saved his people, Green Arrow has saved his, and they start talking and Batman's like, well, only thing we can do is just blow up the entire area, because if Amazo and Luthor wins, this is going to just be bad for my cred. And honestly, I didn't pay too much for the Hall of Justice. It could be a tax write-off.
It was all about defending his rep this time around, wasn't it?
He's been listening to Sportsmaster. He was like, yo, he's just in Sportsmaster's podcast around the puck.
He's also been playing too much Call of Duty, trying to call in an airstrike. But
which everyone's against.
Yeah. Oh, yes. No one is for. I'm sure if Wonder Woman was around, she'd also disagree. But she's not. But anyway, so we do get a quick cutaway. Flash is looking at all the Earths. Forget about that, because there's another cutaway immediately where chains and whips don't excite Barry, because right now he's getting whipped around by Superwoman on Earth 3 in the Hall of Crime. And unlike, she doesn't have a lasso of truth, she has a lasso of submission that actually shocks the people into obeying. And Flash is just trying to get his bearings. He's like, look, this world is messed up. They mentioned Lex Luthor. So he's like, what happened with Lex? And they turn around and Lex Luthor's head is on the wall.
literally on a wall. I think that's also your PG-13 here. And one of the best lines of the movie, Flash goes, "How can you be the government and criminals?" And all of them start laughing.
Someone was in 2024 and wrote that line, definitely.
We don't need to unpack that. If you don't know, we're not going to explain it to you. Anyway, Ultraman, upon hearing Flash's story, is like, this is cool because we kind of already have taken over this world. So maybe we're bored. Let's go and enslave another one. But one roadblock to their plan is that they need a speedster to get there. And Johnny Quick isn't fast enough and he can't do it. And Flash obviously won't do it. So they decide, let's kill Flash and take our chances. But before they can, the stranger, instead of grabbing Flash's face, decides to grab this W and stop the crime syndicate in their tracks.
Yeah, it is astounding. And it's like, you really want to see more of this scene. However, we got a time trip once again to Barry waking up on the day of his wedding. He's looking in the mirror. John Stewart is there, making sure that his tie is tied up right, as John Stewart is his best man. While he's there eating sandwiches, either at the rate of a speedster or that of a typical teenager. And just like in previous scenes, Barry is sitting there trying to connect the dots. He's like, okay, I'm here for my wedding, and these individuals are here. He mentions that Bruce, Clark, and John were all off-world, which I'm hoping wasn't for War World, because that would mean that, like, off-world basically means, hey, my friends are being tortured by intergalactic warlord. So they just couldn't make it to the wedding today. And then this is, as he's doing this, I'm assuming that he's kind of remembering something else. I'm hoping that he's remembering that he needs to go and help his friends over in the Justice League forming. However, he does decide that, like, something big is going to happen. So he needs to go and talk to Iris about it. So he's like, I need to go talk to her. And obviously everybody's like, oh, it's bad luck to see the bride in the wedding dress. But he's just like, I just need to talk to her. And they start talking. He tells her that something big is going to happen. He doesn't know what, doesn't know when, but he does know that it happens on their wedding day. And as he time trips once again, he hops back over to the battle with Amazo as he super speeds through LexCorp. He finds the cell that Dr. Ivo is being held in, and they start having a conversation at the same time that Barry is piecing together, because once again, he did his time trip. He's like, all right, you're Dr. Ivo. I'm here to try to get you. And as they're talking, he realizes that Dr. Ivo has Hutchinson-Gilford syndrome, which is something real that I just found out from my own Googling. But the best way I can describe it is, like, if you ever seen that movie that Robin Williams was in called Jack, it's basically you start aging at a very rapid rate.
Yes. And this incident motivated Ivo to work with Lex Luthor to build a robot that could prolong life. So this is where Flash pieces together. It must have been overhauled and reprogrammed in some way, because it ain't doing that right now. And definitely by Lex Luthor. So don't worry about that again. We're cutting away. We're back on Earth 3. It is being absolutely wrecked. And in an interesting turn, Superwoman and Ultraman are actually out there trying to save people. They're trying to save buildings full of people. And people are in turn very amazed to see the sight of these villains helping out. But it's pretty much in vain, because buildings are toppling by the thousands every minute. And even the stranger, Mr. Touchy Stranger, says, hey.
That's the PG-13 name. There yeah. we go.
Sorry, your world's kind of already dead. And this stranger, who sounds nothing like Constantine, by the way, nothing at all, says that.
And doesn't use any magic like Constantine.
Not yellow or anything, you know. That same facial structure, British accent, no way. He says, you know, I walk all worlds doomed to die. It's my punishment. I don't even remember what I did. You and I share guilt, Flash. And look, we keep saying it, but really, don't go to prison in the DC universe.
Facts.
7-year bid, like Ocean Master. You get a 17-year bid for stealing a watch, like a character did in Batman Brave and the Bold. Or you could be punished for so long that you don't even remember what you did. So get your nose clean in every DC universe. But
We cut away from this before we get any answers. We go back to the Amazo battle, and he's nearly killing everyone. And even worse, Lex kills Green Arrow emotionally by saying, "My brain is a better superpower than a bow and arrow, bro."
I mean, we know he was shooting lasers, but I didn't know he was also hitting them with that heat, though.
Woo! He about to drop that diss track. But right in the middle of battle, Amazo goes, "Boss, am I not violating the three laws for my robot right now?"
And Luthor tells him, "Don't worry about it. Just keep on going." And Amazo, unfortunately, has to abide by these rules. Because as we learn from a conversation that Flash and Dr. Ivo have as they're running through, Luthor must have found some way to get around these, like, the specific coding that Dr. Ivo put in to make sure that Amazo didn't do anything to harm human life. And it sounds like he's doing that. He's found all the loopholes. And as Amazo is about to give the final blow to most of these heroes here, this is when Ivo does appear, thankfully, and he tells Amazo, like, "Look, everything that you're doing is not preserving human life. In fact, you're taking human life. And unfortunately, the thing that I created you for, to save individuals and to give people this energy, isn't possible. You can only take." Amazo's so confused by this, because he's just like, "Well, it doesn't follow along with my mission parameters." So Ivo says, "Well, how about this? Give me the meta energy that you've been absorbing, and let's see what happens. Like, save me right now." And Amazo presses his finger against Ivo's head. You see Ivo start to light up a bit in this, like, kind of technological kind of looking things. Looks really cool, like a cooler version than I believe it was Superman 3. And this is when Ivo just collapses down to the floor. And Amazo just kept asking, like, "Professor Ivo, are you well? Are you unwell? What's going on? Why aren't you getting up?" Barry checks his pulse, and it's revealed that Professor Ivo is dead. And Amazo's just shocked to see this. And he starts questioning, how is this possible? And this is when Batman starts putting two to two together. He asked Amazo, "Hey, what's the possibility of Professor Ivo, of, like, anyone catching this Hutchinson syndrome?" And he's like, "Very little, one in a billion, if anything." And then Batman asks, "What is the possibility that Professor Ivo could have even gotten this?" And this is when Amazo says, "It's more likely that Luthor infected Ivo with this genetic condition," which I didn't know was possible to infect someone with a genetic condition like that.
Right. That's why I love Batman's favorite superpower. My favorite Batman superpower is the leaps he makes in logic. Like, Superman can leap a single building. Batman can leap through logic like nobody's business. So Amazo immediately lashes out at Lex. Lex, in a minute, takes apart the whole suit. And when he's about to kill him, Flash says, "Look, try to stay on mission. Preserve all life, even garbage like that." And in... Amazo returns all the power he gave, depowering himself. And in a really stirring scene, one of my favorite scenes of this movie, Amazo goes, "You know, I was built on a lie." And Flash says, "That's okay. You saved us." And he goes, "I only saved you from me," before he shuts off. Nolan North, in this role as Amazo, incredible vocal performance there. That's some of his best stuff in this movie. He's always great. We know he's always great, but this is a definite highlight of his delivery. And also, this follows up with another clever twist, because as they're wrapping up this Amazo incident, it's revealed that them forming the Justice League was just a ruse to draw out Amazo. They never intended to do it. But Batman says, "You know, during the battle, Lexan compared himself to me. And if I'm going to be better than him, I need to work with the team. So let's make this for real. Also, I bought the building, so might as well do something with it." So as we get this plot line wrapped up, very rare in this movie to get any plot line wrapped up, we cut away to old man Barry and Iris
hanging out.
Yeah. It's a very sudden jump, but we do see that that he wakes up. They're both older now. She recreates the meal that Barry had when they first met. And she keeps mentioning about like it's the day. And he was like, wait, our wedding anniversary. And he keeps going through a list. I'm just like, geez, man, like making us all look bad out here trying to remember. Like, one, you didn't remember any of these anniversaries? Like, my guy, cell phones. But they kiss, and this was one of my favorite like transition scenes that I think in this film, where as they kiss, the transition goes into Barry and Iris's wedding, continuing that conversation where he left off. And as they are up by the altar, we see that Vixen is officiating the wedding. And much like any Barry and Iris wedding, I think as of late, it gets interrupted by some cosmic otherworldly presence. As we see that Harbinger, who we were introduced to in the last film, Justice League War World, she's presented, or this person has presented themselves. And they're demanding that Barry travel up to like the monitor ship, because there is the world is ending and they got to collect all the heroes. So,
yeah. I mean, honestly, she did them a favor, because Vixen was making the speech all about her.
Like, oh, yeah. You're right. It was just like, I got the full backstory on Vixen in like 30 minutes. Yeah.
Like, she's officiating the wedding and she's like, when my dad was a priest. I'm like, no. This is not what you do. You don't. No one asks why you're chosen to officiate. You just officiate. That's what you do at a wedding. Like,
I've officiated a couple of weddings. And I was just like, I'm gonna start stealing this tactic. I'm gonna talk about myself a couple times on Monday. So as Harbinger tells Barry that Barry has to move along. Iris steps in and is just like, hold up, you're collecting all the heroes, right? You do realize that we have Green Arrow, Green Lantern, Vixen, Barry, and someone else, I think, we're all here. It's just like, why don't we just save you like a couple of trips? Which works out really well, because then everybody starts being teleported onto the ship. Everyone starts to reconnect with like friends that they saw either in old movies or introduce themselves to new individuals. So like Barry reconnects with his Earth 2 friends, specifically like Black Canary. We also see that Bruce meets his Earth 2 partner with Dick Grayson, an older version of Dick Grayson now, who has fully realized his more Robin route. He comes over to say hi. He shares like how happy he was with the fact that Bruce took him in as a kid on this alternate universe. And he also reveals that Bruce had a daughter, and he introduces him to Huntress, aka Helena Wayne, who Bruce deduces that is his and Selena's daughter, and also that apparently on Earth 2 he passed away not too long ago, so it's been nice for her to see her father's face once again.
Also, one of the best lines in any Batman related media, where when Robin's like, hey, I was your sidekick on another world, you took me in as a child and raised me, Batman goes, that sounds really irresponsible, actually. I love that line. Just like I love this section, where there's a lot of heroes booming into the background throughout the scene, probably like hundreds. And now my co-host will name every single one. Go ahead. Every single character that was on the ship. You go ahead. You take this from here. We'll be here another hour.
That list was almost created. I'm just letting you know right now. But I will give some highlights, because we did see that Superman walks up to Wonder Woman and the two of them share a kiss. This is not the Superman that we have seen in this Tomorrowverse. This is actually an older version of Superman who has now joined the relationship with Wonder Woman. But he does meet with Earth 1 Superman, and he comments on how, aren't you lucky that you get to keep your hair? We also see Question. We see Ted Kord, Blue Beetle. We see Nightshade. And our favorite of all time, or rather favorite new hero of all time, because, you know, Tusk is always going to be number one in our hearts.
Of course.
We see, for the first time ever with a speaking role, Will Everett, the amazing man, the grandfather of Onyx, who we just found out existed in the DC Comics universe.
Hell yeah. This is what we're here for. We don't care about the worlds exploding. We care about worlds colliding with Amazing Man. Yeah, no, there's so many cameos. Really, It's fun to pause and see who you can see in the background because there's a lot of meetings of minds. But the attention is definitely given to Dr. Light, who makes a good point of like, you kidnapped me. And it's like, well, save the world. It's like, no, you kidnapped me in my bathrobe. Could I have not put on a towel or something? And she's introduced to a fabricator machine and she gets a costume, she gets her powers. Backstory instantly all at once. And there's a mystery man in the background who gets dressed and just tries to slink away. Harbinger is revealed as Supergirl, if you didn't know that already. And then all of a sudden, a mysterious man with a booming voice, with a kind of almost bald head, comes in and says, I look over all the universes. I am the Watcher. Oh, so sorry. Wrong show. Wrong show. I am the Monitor. And all the multiverse is in danger. So Guardians of the Multiverse, no, I keep confusing them. He's like, all these heroes, we want you to come together and stop this crisis from happening. And again, sorry, blistering cutaway to Old Man Flash again. He's like, Iris about to go to work. And he's like, I want to throw on my suit. And she's like, I don't think you need to. But you look good in it. And Iris, come on, OSHA rules demand that Barry puts on that frictionless suit. Otherwise, who knows what could happen? And again, blistering cutaway, we're back on Earth 3 and Ultraman. There's a wave, a wall of antimatter destroying the Earths. They're threatening all realities. But a wall of antimatter is coming for Ultraman, and he has the strategy, the one flawless strategy. Punch it.
And obviously, it does not work. But I do have one question, though. How did Ultraman know it was an antimatter wave?
That was in one of the scenes we didn't see. Flash was still blacked out for that part.
it. Okay. So the entire crime syndicate decides, you know what? Punching it sounds good. So they decide, let's go forth and try to see what we can do. And obviously, one by one, we see their deaths. And I feel like Owlman had the most Batman approach to it because while everybody was getting taken over by the antimatter death wave, he was just like, forget this. I'm gonna set my ship to blow up before I get hit. I'm gonna go out on my own terms. And this is where we get a chance to see once again, flashback forward to back on the monitor ship where, you know, questions start getting questioned by the question. He's wondering, who is this person that's brought us all together? How do we know that this isn't some kind of trap? And people start questioning this. And Batman even realizes that, hold up, this may be not what we think. This may be like individuals here are very smart, are legit, elite strategists, and some people have like the muscle and the power to probably get things done. So he realizes that this is more of a think tank to try to see if we could solve this issue. Barry is witnessing this, and then we get another time trip again back onto Earth 3, where we see now that Barry is running away with Johnny Quick. The two of them are trying to run away from this wave that's just like basically on their heels. And the more that Johnny Quick is realizing that he can't keep up because Barry is siphoning off parts of his speed force and that he can't travel to another Earth like Barry can, he just decides, I'm going to start taking some of the hits so that Barry can get forward. And he's like, is your Earth better than what mine is right now? And he's like, yeah. And he takes not only the rebar to the stomach, basically a screw to the face, and then a car to the entire body.
It's one of the most hilarious and sobering deaths you'll ever see. But now, in this actually kind of tragic death of Johnny Quick and the rest of the crime syndicate, we cut back to Old Man Barry, where it's revealed that he has a Mezzo's head in a basement that he keeps selling in cheesy jokes. So, another form of prison. And Barry runs on a treadmill to lend Amazo power. Clever solution of like, you know, he was absorbing power earlier, so it's nice that Flash is freely giving it. And we cut back to the grand ship where all the heroes are, and they're arguing about the best solution. It's here I kind of wonder why they didn't bring in any smart villains, like at least one Lex Luthor. I get it. You know, it's Lex. But I think this would have been a time to like maybe say that he has self-interest or find a good version of him.
And not just kill them all.
Yeah. There's another question, but we're gonna get to that later. Just like question, I have questions. But during the session, Flash brings everybody coffee and
Monitor's like, yo, is Harbinger, did she give you Uber lifts to every universe where you got all these different coffee ingredients? He's like, nah, I just vibrated really fast and went to different universes. And that's where they go, ah, we could do that with the herbs. We could vibrate the herbs so the antimatter wave passes through instead. And this is also where Flash casually drops, which I think should have been given a lot more attention, is that he... Another reason he's able to do this is because when he was on Earth 3 and he took the speed from Johnny Quick, he started experiencing time in a non-linear fashion.
Mm-hmm.
That drops really quick. And that's why we've been seeing the movie like this, which I have feelings about. mainly the feeling that this definitely should have been given a little bit more time. But in any case, with the plan in motion to create towers that will vibrate fast, Batman organizes everything. I mean, he did build the Batcave in secret, so I guess that qualifies him. We go to the all-water Aquaman Earth for a second, and then we cut away to Old Man Barry, he was now working on carrying a cable to the tower. But before we can question why that makes sense, we cut back to Superman asking for relationship advice.
Yeah. And it's because Earth 1 Superman, this man of tomorrow, he asked this Earth 2 Superman, it's like, yo, real talk, how did you bag Wonder Woman? That's not actually what he says, but it was the same kind of energy. And it's a very heartfelt and actually heartbreaking kind of story. It's revealed that because at the end of our first movie here, we do know that Clark does have feelings for Lois. There's a possibility of them having a relationship as well. As we see also in Barry's universe, they do seem to be together when they are during parts of the wedding or like in other scenes. So this is when Earth 2 Superman shares, Lois and I had a great marriage. Unfortunately, the thing that beat us was time. We're not immortal. However, I did sit and watch as Lois just died from old age, and it was hard to find someone new because I knew that was always going to be the case with whoever I did find. However, Wonder Woman was there for me during that time, and we saw that together we can have a very long life together. But again, we're not immortal, so it's going to be to the point where I'm going to pass away, and then Wonder Woman is going to experience the same thing that I went through once again. It's a very sad tale to share. I think it was very important to have it too, though, because it's like, this is what I did like about this movie a lot, of these like random dynamics between characters, like the story that built out of Bruce meeting his Earth 2 Robin and then the daughter that he had with the woman that he fell in love with. And now here we're having this same Clark and Superman having this conversation about like, what does my life look like outside of the cape?
Mm.
And unfortunately, this conversation gets cut very short because even though they're making great progress on the cosmic tuning forks that they're trying to make, they do see that the antimatter wave is speeding up somehow, which alarms everyone, including the monitor, who realizes that it must be one of two things. Either the wave is sentient and knew that this work was being done, so speeding up its process, or someone is controlling it and found out about the plan, once again, speeding up the process.
Yeah, and even Dr. Light's like, we're screwed. So Flash, even with his vast speed, can't do it fast enough. So the stranger arrives one more time, thankfully without touching his face, and says, Barry, run to Iris right now. So he gets to Iris, and as he reaches her, we get another really cool reveal where he takes Iris into Flash time with him. And now we realize that the old man Barry and Iris is this one. It's them going through Flash time, and that's why they aged so quickly. Don't ask us how much time it took, how long they were in Flash time. We can't tell you. We don't know. They're not really concerned with that. I also have questions about how does fire and cooking and eating and all of that work in Flash time? Because can you turn on an oven in Flash time? Like, how does that work? I was like, maybe Barry could do something with his hands really fast, but Iris surprised Barry with food. Like, how did she heat it up? How does fire accelerate? In Flash time.
Yeah, I would assume that's coming from like a bubble that's around them. However, you're right, because like that gas has to be coming from another location to travel up the pipeline in order to get to the spark, which can't, this is going to take a hell of time. So unless she's prepping meals like 3 months in advance, we're screwed. Like, they cannot eat.
Yeah, she casually turns on the sink at one point.
It must be a bubble. It must be some kind of bubble. But like these little travel moments is the thing that we need explanation on.
Yeah, how does he sleep? Lots of complicated mechanics, but it doesn't matter because Iris is dead.
I need to say something about this. She has a heart attack assembling what seems to be the last cable, and the two of them are having this very heartfelt moment. And then the writing in this film did something that like rocks me to my core, because it unlocks a core memory of mine when Iris looks at Barry and says, "This is the big one." And I was just like, did they just sit here and write out a scene where Iris quotes a Sanford and Son joke on her deathbed?
Yep.
All right, well, it's now canon. Barry and Iris were watching Sanford and Son, so I believe that Barry can actually quote a lot of Sanford and Son and has seen a lot of Red Fox during flash time.
I guess that's the only thing. We're about to Iris of her dad. So as Iris dies with the last piece of the tower, we cut back to normal time for a second, where, you know, Batman says goodbye to his kids, even though, you know, they're not his. They have this understanding, like, we know we're not each other's, but it's close enough. And we cut back to Flash, and he has the Amazo head attached to the tower. And Amazo's like, okay, to do this, we have to go in normal time. We can't do it in Flash time. And I've said a lot about Nolan North here, but I also want to say Matt Bomer in this scene is really incredible. When they have an exchange where, you know, he goes, "Hey, Barry," and the sadness and weight in Matt Bomer's voice when he just says, "Yes, Amazo," listen to it. I can't do it justice, but there's so much pain. There's so much fragility in this powerful man's voice. And Amazo goes, "Thank you for giving me a chance to fulfill my purpose of extending life." Really nice theme coming full circle. So we go into normal time. The tower appears in full, and now Flash tries to run on the tower, and it doesn't work, and everybody dies. Wouldn't that be an ending?
I mean, it almost felt like that. But fortunately, as he exits out the Flash time, we do see that the towers get rapidly built. I'm guessing enough for every Earth. So as he does this, question, where are you? We have questions. So as this is done, everybody is cheering and applauding because they realize that the Earth is safe, because we do see that the antimatter wave phases through the Earths as they all vibrate at a frequency that causes them to be unaffected. This is when we see that they're now, the monitor, he's watching as this is happening. He's happy, and he's hearing a voice telling him, "Well, looks like the experiment worked." And we turn around, and it's the Spectre, the same man that we saw that was kind of introduced in the Constantine scene short that we had. And he commends him for a job well done. And as Barry is just sitting there in his moment, recognizing that he lost his friend and everything, he turns around once again and sees the Spectre. And he asks, "Are you deaf?" And he says, "No, I'm the Spectre, the Wrath of God. Death isn't as good looking." Let me throw in a little humble brag about myself.
I heard it the other way. Like, he said, death is better looking.
Maybe that's what it was. I just remember him talking about someone's looks, and I was just like, what?
I mean, both of these things raise questions.
So this is when Spectre shares kind of the same thing that the man that has been following Barry along, the stranger, has been telling him. And he's like, you know, "You did something that you need to go back and change it. You need to go before the beginning." And Barry's wondering, like, what's going on? And as the Spectre states, "Well, the Speed Force isn't done with you yet," Barry starts running as he hops on over to the beginning of our film. where once again we saw this, assuming this version of Barry post incident where he got his abilities, and we see that the man that was speaking out to him was actually this old version of Barry here, trying to tell him, saying, "Oh wait, I need to go back before the beginning." And he hops back over to the before the beginning of this film, as he hop into the previous film of War World, as he's talking with Bruce. And then the whole thing shows kind of like, once again, Barry needs to go back even further. But we leave off with the before the beginning being when Barry and Iris actually got married.
Sure. Okay. And I guess it's implied that they again used flash time to have a wedding with all their friends and have a dance. And you know, a DC project, you can't end on a happy note. So we cut back to the big ship, and Brainy, who they say in a throwaway line that they can't, time travel is messed up right now, so they couldn't bring Brainy from the future. I mean, but you're able to pluck heroes from every era. And you couldn't bring Brainy from the future, but Brainy disintegrates into nothing like the end of Infinity War, because the actions in the present have altered the future. What does that mean? Well, forget about that. It's probably, you gotta wait till part two, because this movie's done right now.
Yeah, so now that we see that all of our heroes, a majority of our heroes from the future, and also the man who, Psycho Pirate, we'll just say his name now, the one who got his own suit after Dr. Light, say disappear into another plane of existence, we don't know what. We'll leave that question with y'all, as we also leave you with a podcast from the Forgotten Entertainment family that you should be listening to the next time you're not listening to us.
Attention, culture consumers. Join me, the Queen of Queries, Sarah O'Connor, and my band of nerdy knights,
Colleen McMillan,
Flo Siegel,
and Anders Drew,
on Bohemian Geek Studies, where we take extremely dorky dives into our favorite fandoms, especially that Star Wars galaxy far, far away. Listen each week as we examine the stories that mean so much to us. Bohemian Geek Studies is available wherever you get your podcasts and is proudly part of the Forgotten Entertainment family.
Now that we have wrapped up the first part of the trilogy of Crisis on Infinite Earths, the beginning of the end of the Tomorrowverse, how many Earths are you giving this film?
I am going to give this film 7 Earths out of 10. This is a really, I'm gonna bump it out, 7.5. Because when this movie really gets to the material it wants to cover, it really excels. The Amazo plot line is exceptional. Amazo, I've never cared about this person. It's a throwaway villain, a cheap knockdown of Ultron at the best case scenario. With no personality. So what they did with Amazo, the journey from, you know, this care, basically it starts out as Baymax and becomes a Terminator, but it stops right before it does it. That whole story with Amazo and how Flash saved the day without throwing a punch in that fight is really good. I did like what they did with Earth 3 about that last moment of realization of trying to save the world that they could have done more for. Love those. But all of this is held together, and Barry and Iris' love story as a whole is really good. But all of it is held together by a multiverse plot that I don't think was fully fleshed out for this movie. I think it will come together in parts 2 and 3. Absolutely. But I do not think the multiverse plot feels organic with everything else. Because there are a lot of questions. We spend more time on Barry and Iris's relationship, which is fine, but we spend more time on that than understanding how any of the multiverse stuff works. For example, why can't the Monitor recruit infinite copies of every hero? That's not explained. If you could have 2 Batman in the room, you take 2 Batman.
Like he did it for Superman. But yeah. Somehow it just didn't work with any other hero.
There are two Supermans. There's one Jay Garrick I saw at one point. There should be many more Flashes, many more Wonder Womans, but there was never an explanation taken. And why I made so many what if Watcher jokes is because in that show, at least, they explained that the Watcher kind of knew how things would turn out, but he had to pick a very specific cocktail of heroes for that to work. But here, the Monitor is like, I don't know if it's going to work out. So, like, why wouldn't you bring everybody? Like, there's no explanation for that really, really solvable problem. So I wish there would have been some kind of justification at all for why he picked the people he picked. So I do think that despite being a massive crossover movie, the crossover parts are the weakest parts of this movie, at least in terms of the multiverse crossover. But the individual pieces of the story, which take up most of it and are centered around Flash, are really strong. And really, Matt Bomer's fantastic in this movie. Really good Flash movie. So yeah, that's where it holds me back. I think there are some Earths where I give it a 10 out of 10 or even lower because there wasn't enough Amazing Man. But on this Earth, I'm really stuck because the strong parts are so strong, but I just didn't resonate with the multiverse as much. Didn't really care that all the Earths were exploding. How about you? Where do you come with this?
Yeah, I was in a similar boat in terms of like where my thinking was going, but I gave this a 6 out of 10. Just because I agree the storytelling for the individual stories is so strong. I love the story about how like Amazo came to be and the connection he had to the formation of the Justice League and how that all came together. Seeing like Batman getting questioned in that way about like, let me use a nuclear strike. And they were like, hold on now. That was all great. Cause it was like, it does show like these are organic conversations. Same thing with the organic conversations that were happening with the with individuals from across different Earths. And even just like the idea, Barry and Iris's relationship, I think this was really well done. I think this was like a great way to see it that like, you know, we've been now for like, I guess like maybe just like a year or so without the Flash CW series. So it's been just about that amount of time since we haven't seen like Barry and Iris on screen in the same way. But seeing it play out here like this, it was like, all right, this is a true love story that these two have. The thing that I just couldn't get past, though, is just like it. While I did like the approach, I did understand the approach of like this story being told through Barry's narration, the time tripping, like that being a possibility. I just think that some scenes probably should have just been put together a little bit better. Like Earth 3, honestly, I feel like that should just all happen in one shot. I think if you collectively put it together, it probably has like a runtime of under 10 minutes. And yeah. Yeah, and it's like at some points it didn't make sense to like the bigger question that was happening. Like something I wish that they did was like have Barry see the destruction of Earth 3 and experience all that before he even meets the Monitor. Because it happens, like it seems like he's having the conversation with the Monitor. The Monitor's explaining it to him, and then he immediately runs over to Earth 3 to see if it's actually true or not. Versus if you just had it be like, hey, I saw it happen on Earth 3. Lasso of Truth, all those scenes would still make sense if you just put it somewhere earlier. And that way you don't have to make an extra scene to explain why Barry knows, like it doesn't have to explain that why what the Monitor is saying is true. Because like we would have seen it, Barry would have seen it. It wouldn't be like, hold on, let me check your work mid-presentation.
And I 100% agree. And it actually nicely segues into my RT alteration, which is I would love to see a version of this movie in linear order.
Yes.
I would love to see it. And yes, that would require some changes to probably some of the Barry and Iris scenes would be condensed a bit. Because I get you want to keep the action of the movie going. But I would like to see this as instead of we time jump
like we did in the movie from random point to random point, to give it more direction and to make us feel like we're working towards something, mm-hmm. I would have the stranger come in and say, I'm going to send you kind of like a Ghost of Christmas Past thing. I'm going to send you to three major events in your life. And you're going to have to collect an item, learn a lesson. And once you're done with it, I'll come and get you every time. And this is what we need to do to save everything. So that we go, we do the Amazo sequence. We go straight on. We have an Amazo, you know, 20 minutes of Amazo. And right as they form the Justice League, comes up, plucks him into Earth 3, you know, takes him from this high, puts him in a low, then has him with Iris. And it's like, why do I need to go to my wedding day? You know, mm-hmm. and have Barry putting it together. We still get all the pieces of Barry's story, but we have a feeling that after the wedding, when he's like, this is the last thing you need to do, and then he goes off, now we have something cooking. And I'm not saying that you can't put some elements. I think hinting at old man Barry and Iris, those could be like maybe dream sequences he's having in between the worlds. He's dreaming of himself with Iris, and we have that kind of through line. But yeah, put it in order, because the way I compare it to is if you were dropped into Avengers Endgame and they were just collecting Infinity Stones, you had no context as to why they're doing it. We cut from like Vormir with Hawkeye and Black Widow to the middle of the Battle of New York to Nebula. You would be, your mind would, and it'd be cool when it all came together later, but the movie is stronger because it tells you we have to do this thing. They go off and do it in their own time, but we at least have a basic understanding of why it's happening, which I think this movie was really missing to make all of it work.
Exactly. Because it's like, and it raises those questions that we had, like, when Barry is just like, I gained the Speed Force after being on Earth 3, and you know, I got that ability, and it's like, well, that would have explained a lot more if you just either said it at an earlier point or really build it out better to explain that this was a thing. So that's why I was like, I had to, like, I've seen movies that were just been like 10 out of 10s, 9 out of 10s, and it's just like, it could have gotten there with the storytelling alone. It really could have gotten there, but given the fact that it's just like, with everything that we've seen in the past, it just feels like it fell short because they just decided to separate a lot of things. And I don't know. It also, I guess I might be still a little bit upset about Barry being like, Superman and Batman are off-world. And it's just like, again, your friends are getting tortured. That is not being off-world.
Yeah, not to mention they come in anyway at the end. So that line doesn't really pay off at all. And from the perspective of the flashbacks, we're not far away from Batman and Superman at any point in this movie. So we can't even really feel their absence. They're there the entire time.
Exactly. And especially since this came right after Justice League War World. Like, honestly, it just feels like you didn't need War World. Just have it be that at the end of Legion of Superheroes and that final credit scene when they get like taken away, just drop them on the monitor ship. I think that it just feels that whole movie, and I keep talking about this, but I'm very upset about it. But like, War World just felt very out of place with the story that they're trying to tell, felt very unnecessary, especially when it's just like, this does basically exactly what I wanted to see in War World.
With the Peacemaker line, I do what you do, but better. Plug for our World review, go back and check it out if you haven't already.
Yeah. Also, the other kind of, actually, I did have a change too. I wish that they did do was, as much as I love seeing old man Barry and Iris, like I love what you mentioned about like you see like kind of like daydreamscapes. Also wonder if this could have been saved for like maybe the second film. Like maybe there was something that I felt throughout the film was just like towards the end, there was like several stopping points that felt almost right. Like, you know, yes, they did save the day, but I think it would also have been cool if like during this time we saw that Flash grabbed Iris and said no, and then that's how the movie ends, and then we open up to Iris calling for Barry, and then it's revealed that like in part two this is him. It's been some time, like, you know, we don't, sometimes the time skip doesn't work, but I feel like in this case it probably could have, because technically it is still the same time. They've just gotten older over across the set between the first and the second films, but guys, wait and see what happens in the second film. But I do think that like this old Barry and Iris could have been a great plot point for part two that now feels like we're just going to be experiencing maybe old Barry for a couple of movies if Barry continues to be the main, the almost like the narrator throughout the rest of these films.
Yeah, I mean, I was, when you said it, I was picturing an Up montage of, you know, Barry and Iris, they go into the Speed Force and they kind of like have this life together, and it, and the montage ends with, you know, just like Up with Iris dying, and then boom, part two. You know, that's a strong opener. And I will, I think it would even put more emphasis on the relationship. And, you know, last thing I'll say is there were several twists in this movie that didn't need to be twists. Yeah. So, for example, the him getting the speed from Earth 3, that should have been way introduced way earlier.
Yeah.
And the, because it explains the narrative framing of the movie. So if you change nothing else, if you don't want to put it in linear order, that's fine. But have a scene earlier where he's like, I'm time skipping because this thing that happens. And he's like, you could even be like, wait a minute, what do you, has that happened yet? And, you know, it, you could do something with that. But yeah, we were in the dark. The Amazo twist too, I feel like we could have gotten a little bit more with that.
Yeah.
I was like, why, where's the rest of his body?
Which I'm hoping that part two will show a little bit more of, like, they, and also, yeah, it just feels like we're just missing some pieces that I don't want to just be like, well, wait for part two to find out more. And it's just like, it feels very TikTok-ish almost.
Yes. You know, one of the philosophies I've always had is, yes, I love sequels. I love multi-parters. I love those. But it should feel like a complete movie. It should, by the time you roll the credits, you should feel like you've had a full experience. That's why cliffhanger endings don't really work in modern movies anymore, because you know they're 2 years away, first of all. And you just feel like you sat there for a long movie without that payoff. So, you know, compare Kill Bill Volume 1, that ends on a really nice button of, okay, this Bill guy we've been hunting the whole movie, he's coming. We get that. We get she's accomplished something. She's killed a couple of assassins. You see, spoilers, I guess, if you haven't seen Kill Bill. But you feel like, okay, she's killed assassins. She's closer to Bill. Bill is there. Next movie's going to be Bill. You're ready. As opposed to, sorry, Fast X, but cutting in the middle of a scene where water is rushing towards you, where there are rumors that Jason Momoa might not even come back as the villain. Like, it's a mess. Finish your movie at a good point. Write a complete story with elements hidden for the next one. But write a complete story so people feel satisfied walking away.
Yeah. And with that, speaking of completed stories, we're going to talk about the completed story that inspired this film, the actual story of Crisis on Infinite Earths, as we talk about briefly about the comic book series. So as we mentioned, this is a three-parter. We're going to get like 90 minutes three times of this. So I'm not going to go through the entire story of Crisis on Infinite Earths for the sake of the fact that like we have two other chances to kind of dive in more about the story. But what I will cover is just like a bit of the introductions and who was there, like who were the first set of people to be brought forward, because it's very much set up in this film. What basically was the 45 minute mark of this film when they started talking a bit more about like the Crisis on Infinite Earths. So it's based off the comic book crossover events of the same name that ran from April 1985 to March 1986 across 12 issues, written by Marv Wolfman and George Perez. RIP to George Perez, who passed away back in 2022. But George Perez helped to bring forward this this story of these like these imageries of like the larger collective groups and these like just like larger off the page almost comic book paneling where we just had these like large group shots, and Marv Wolfman was able to put those stories together, write them out. So like, Marv Wolfman helped to put together teams like the New Teen Titans and other characters. And that's why we always have now, like, these stories consist of like teams of like six or so on any like DC team at times. And at the time, the reason why it was put together, and I think we've talked about this in our first season too, back during the Justice League Dark Apocalypse War film, like, crisis moments are moments in which, like, they realize that too much is going on in the stories, whether it be that there's too many versions of one character, there's too many Earths to handle, where there's just too much going on that it feels like the reader has to read like 20 odd comics in order to understand one story, even though they don't take place on the same time, on the same Earth. And as a person who's actually had bought like maybe 30 comics in one shot at a comic book store almost every week, I appreciate y'all for trying to compile these stories. So this is one of the first moments in which that happened. And Crisis on Infinite Earths helped to open the door of just like, let's create big moments where heroes could die, and it changes the entire way we tell stories about who takes out the mantle or who gets inspired or anything else like that. And this movie in particular, I mentioned it was 12 issues for the full story. This basically almost covers only issue one of this.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, like, I'm expecting the last two movies to speed through either a lot or just really do a good job in like adapting 11 issues of a story. So what ends up happening in this in particular is, once again, we meet the Monitor, who explains that something is happening that's destroying different Earths around the multiverse. We do actually see that one of the Earths that gets destroyed is Earth 2, which was Earth 2 at the time, which is now Earth 3, thanks to the reboot that happened with Flashpoint and New 52. Earth 2 at the time was the Crime Syndicate. We talked about them during the Crisis on Two Earths movie. So we do see same thing. There's lightning, there's natural disasters, and there's also this antimatter wave, all while this one person is just watching as this is all happening. And it's a character by the name of Pariah. Pariah is, I'm assuming in this movie, the man who is constantly touching Barry on the face due to a fact of a previous crime that he committed. And we don't know, even in issue one, we don't know what that crime was, but we do know that now he has been sentenced to watch as Earths die. And this is basically what this individual is doing. And we see that he is watching as Earth 2 dies, as other Earths die. And then we get introduced to the concept of the Monitor wanting to assemble his Guardians of the Multiverse. Or basically, it is this. And one other big thing that happens is a character who isn't in the movie, or rather isn't, well, unsure if he's in the movie or not. Because you saw his head, but on this Earth, which is actually my mistake, this is actually Earth 3. Earth 3's Crime Syndicate is happening here. Earth 3's Alexander Luthor is a hero, and he is married to Lois Lane, and he decides the best thing to do as his antimatter wave is heading to him is to send his son, Alexander Luthor Jr., to another reality so as to spare him from the antimatter wave destroying that will end up killing him. So it's a very strong parallel to the story of Superman as we see it played out here. Alexander Luthor Jr. is going to play a part in future Crisis on Infinite Earth storytelling in the comic. However, don't know yet how it's going to play out in part two, seeing as either him or his father's head has been chopped off. So we will wait and see. But I will talk about who was actually gathered, who we did see. The first set of heroes that we actually did see present were Dr. Hiyoshi, who we did see get introduced in the film today. We saw Psycho Pirate, Dawnstar, who is introduced in the Legion of Superheroes movie, but she gets more talking lines with Supergirl Harbinger here. We see an older version of Superman, not quite like this Earth 2 counterpart we saw in our film, because he has more fantastic, Mr. Fantastic grayish hair. We see a version of Flash, we see Parasite, we see Blue Beetle, Tech Cord. Firestorm and Killer Frost get thrown into the mix too. Fun fact about this one, this is where I was talking about Psycho Pirate being present, because Psycho Pirate has the ability to change the emotional state of an individual. whether it be to create great fear or to swing them to be a more positive ally towards you. So when Firestorm gets recruited by Harbinger, who is actually named Lila in the book, very much like our Arrowverse counterpart of Harbinger, Psycho Pirate ends up manipulating Killer Frost's emotional state. So now she's in love with Firestorm versus seeing him as her greatest enemy.
That's not okay, though.
It's not. It's not. But it does answer your question of why is it that Monitor didn't bring together supervillains. Comic book version of him did.
Ah.
Movie okay. version did not.
Yeah, movie version of him was a little too prejudiced and biased, you know.
He did see the world in black and white. That's what it was. Next up, he also has Simon. Simon was also one of the people recruited. Fun fact about Simon.
Oh, comics. God.
Yeah.
Simon.
Yeah. Fun fact about him, though, he has a ponytail, but is still bald.
That takes some talent, sir.
He is holding on to them hairs straight with all his power.
Beware his power.
We also got Obsidian, who I don't think they were introduced in the Stargirl series, but they are supposed to be the twin brother of Jade, who was introduced in the Stargirl series, aka the children of the first Green Lantern, Alan Scott.
Okay, good to see you.
We also saw Geo-Force.
Yes, hot lava.
Hot lava. Solovar, who is a super ape from Gorilla City. John Stewart is in the mix. Firebrand is also there. Firebrand was I think she's more human-like in this story here, but she was like an android that was developed by T.M. Morrow in the Young Justice series, as we saw. And finally, we also saw Dr. Polaris. This is not the daughter of Magneto from the X-Men.
Damn it.
Same powers, though. Same power set. Honestly, it looks, yeah. Minus the green hair, and this is a dude.
Well, my lawyers will still be talking about this.
But I did want to bring up Dr. Hiyoshi because as we saw in the movie, she was quite upset over the fact that she was brought forward in a robe and everyone else is dressed up. This is her actual comic book introduction.
This really?
Yes. She was taken by Harbinger because the Monitor knew that he needed someone similar to Dr. Light to be able to do something for him. So he recruited Dr. Hiyoshi, who was shown to actually have been already been aware of the crisis in the antimatter wave that was taking out Earth, because through like her own research and use of a very, very powerful telescope, she saw the wave heading towards Earth and saw it also destroying and had readings of its presence on other planes of existence. So because she was so informed, Monitor asked Harbinger to go and bring her forward, and in a very similar way, minus the fabricator, which honestly is a little weird because there's like a version of that in the Marvel universe during Secret Wars that we're just going to pass by really quick. She does get the powers of Dr. Light as given to her by Harbinger, and they all work together. At first, it's a fun little scene because, again, most of these individuals are people who like are villains and are like basically their opponents are on the base. So they're like, we got to fight these people. But then they get told about what's going on. And more importantly, they have to actually fight against shadow creatures that pop up, because as they are trying to build out the tower, very similar to what we saw in the Arrowverse Crisis on Infinite Earth storytelling, they start fighting against these shadow figures, and this is when they're like, all right, we actually do have to work together because the worlds are about to get destroyed. And I actually forgot about the biggest person of all, who was also included on this list, Orion, the Lord of Atlantis.
Who?
Yeah, he does nothing, But it's just fun to see that, like, Young Justice is still pulling out those characters for us. But yeah, that is basically it. I can't go into much further because I feel like the way this movie ended, I might end up spoiling the rest of the story for y'all. But know, though, that you're going to see many more characters. Part one of this, issue one of the story was very just like, we need to put together these individuals. Again, these were just like the smartest of the smart people that Monitor wanted to put together to create this think tank. And the following issues, we'll get to see more of the DC heroes that we know and see more of and create these iconic scenes that we'll see not only get used throughout several more versions of storytelling and in the comic books, but also across animated and live action productions. And with that, we're just going to wrap this up. We're going to prepare ourselves for the next part two of it. So it's going to be some time before you hear from us next. So we hope you keep on checking out our socials for updates on our episodes that you can find across podcast platforms on Patreon and now also on YouTube again. So take care of yourselves and remember that if someone on the street grabs your face, let's just hope that you have the Speed Force. Otherwise, you're going to have to open up a huge bottle of hand sanitizer on there.
And if you experience time in a linear fashion, write down the lotto numbers. Don't be an idiot. Ooh. Get it done. Get yourself some money.
Thanks again for listening. Yet another DC Animated Podcast is a proud part of the Forgotten Entertainment family. If you liked what you heard, leave a review and share us with a friend. Also, be sure to follow us wherever you get your podcasts and on social media at YADC Animated Pod.